Hey guys, I've been noticing that our audience has been growing a bit lately.
I didn't do it. I mean, nice. If only there was some way to show the fans our appreciation.
Ooh, I know. Free passes to see the Fantastic Four?
I think that would have the opposite effect.
Okay, how about free passes to not see the Fantastic Four?
Maybe think on that one a minute.
Wait, here's an idea. What if we do a live recording of our show?
But how would we get people to come see us?
I know.
No, John. No passes for the Fantastic Four.
Well, shoot, I'm out of ideas then.
Well, that's the easy part. The Philly Podcast Festival is in a few weeks. We can just do it there.
Brilliant. But what will we talk about?
We could.
John?
How about we invite a guest?
Even better, is it free?
Completely. And it's at the Tattooed Mom on South Street, which has great food and drinks.
That's good, because we'll need them.
The Tattooed Moms?
No, the drinks.
Right. So if you're a fan of the show and you're in the greater Philadelphia area, please come down to join us at our live podcast at the Philadelphia Podfest. We will be performing on Saturday, August 29th at 6 p.m. We'll be joined by none other than comic book artist Mike Manley, creator of Darkhawk.
Hey, that means it'll be the three of us and a guest. We could be the FFF.
Really, John?
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And Brad.
Yay. Hey, you remembered this time.
Hey man, you give me a permanent spot, this is what you get. So, you know, I'm finally on payroll, so hey, here, we're good.
Wait,
Yes.
wait, wait, he gets paid?
Oh,
oops, I
sorry.
wasn't supposed to tell
No,
you
you
that.
weren't.
Oops.
Oh, we're gonna have a talk.
Well, before we get that all sorted out, we actually have three guests with us this week, so this is going to be a little nuts this week, I think. They were on our show way back at episode 52, telling us all about their company and the books they were producing, and we talked a little about Dungeons and Dragons, if I remember correctly.
I can't believe I missed that.
So we have the guys from Frightened Entertainment with us. We have Alex,
Hello.
James,
What's up?
and Gabe.
How's it going?
Good. So.
That went a lot better than I thought. I'm like, this is gonna go bad. Like, someone's not gonna like respond properly, or the timing's gonna be off.
So what do
That's
you
usually
guys?
me.
Yeah.
See? I told you.
Or technical difficulties with me dropping off. So hang tight. It's a fun
That was
ride.
last time. That
So, okay, Gabe, you weren't on the show last time.
No, it wasn't.
So I guess I'll start with you. How did you get hooked up with these two crazy guys?
Well, me and Alex went to college together, so I've known Alex for years. And then I met James through Alex, and yeah, been working with Alex off and on for a couple years.
It's true. Gabe is the best. Gabe works in an animation studio, so but every once in a while I'm like, can you do this for me? He's like, yes, I will do this for you.
Yeah, I make cartoons. I bring them to life. That's what I do.
Ah, anything we might have seen?
Venture Brothers, Super Jail, China Illinois, Turbo, Hot Wheels,
Oh.
Motor City. There's a show called that's coming out called it's on Comedy Central. I can't remember the name right now.
Moonbeam
It looks
City.
like it's super 80s. Can't remember what it's called, but it looks cool.
It's called Moonbeam City.
Yes, Moonbeam City, that one.
That's what I just work on it. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, and now I'm on like preschool shows, so it's a weird jump to go, jump on preschool shows.
Eastwich Studios.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, was art something you always wanted to do then?
Yeah, I've been in art since art classes in like 5th grade, and then I went to art junior high, art high school, and art college. So I've been in. This is the only thing I can do.
That's not
I have
true.
no. I have no skills outside of art. I can't build anything. I can't. I
He
have no
makes me mac
skills.
and cheese.
I was about to say that. I was about to say that.
So, how much are your hands insured for?
Uh, We don't get insurance in this business.
Oh, no.
I started to say, man, we don't have an artist union. We don't get paid like that, man.
No.
Benefits don't come. If you don't draw, you don't eat.
Exactly.
Why do you think I do sideline internet marketing? It pays the bills.
Yes, if you guys haven't guessed, Brad's an artist as well.
Really?
So Alex and James, what has Frightened Entertainment been up to since we last talked?
I'm just really wrapping up Champions of Earth, which has been going great. We had this like weird downtime that was partially my fault because I should have listened to James, where there was this publisher. I'm not going to get into it, but basically they were reviewing the book. They were reviewing the book for like 7 months. And it got to a point where I just said, guys, I need the answer today. Because I put everything on hold with you guys reviewing it. And they were like, can we get back to you in December? I'm like, no.
They were waiting to schedule you is what they were doing. Yeah.
I don't know what they were doing, but it was getting to a point where it was just like, look, yeah. It's been a while. I have to finish this book. It needs to come out. What's going on? And yeah. Then pretty much right when I got that answer, and it wasn't like a nasty thing. I didn't end on negative terms. I mean, who knows what will happen from it? But it got to a point where I said, look, this thing has to get finished. It needs to get done. And then since then, we've just been wrapping it up and it's going great. I mean, we got Gabe did a cover, which has been great. Pretty much all the artwork is done. It's just really finishing it up. And that'll be coming out in December, the first issue. And then I have a book I'm working on called Captives. And the first issue of that should be coming out in December as well. And then in addition to that, I'm working on a comic of my own. But I've been so busy with a million other things, I don't have that much time to draw it. And that's pretty much where we're at right now. So we're publishing this year, ideally, which is exciting. Because it's hard to be sitting on a lot of work. I think that's a tendency, everybody, when you have a good body of work, everyone's like, oh, you got to put it out. And I'm going, no, I don't want it to come out on time. I want to put out a book, and then the next book comes out 6 months later, because things happen, right? So for me, I've just been holding off, especially on Champions of Earth, until it is done, I'm not putting out anything. And it should be done, ideally, until December. It's 4 issues. I want them to come out on time, back to back to back. It's the same thing with Captives. Like, Captives was going really well, and then I had these weird problems with my artist. And I'm really glad I held off on publishing this because it would have been like a year gap between issues. Looks really bad. So that's really where we're at now. But everything is moving along very nicely now, which is great. And,
I mean, that's definitely something I'm glad to hear because I don't know how many independent guys I know that they put out the first issue and you see them a year later at the convention. You're like, oh, where's issue two? Oh, we're not done it yet.
Yeah, no, I deliberately do not want to. I hate that. I don't want to do that to people. So my argument is, if you're buying it, it's going to come out. I could have put out a lot of that work a year ago or even a year and a half ago. I've just said no. Until I have a good body of work, I'm not putting it out because it. I feel like it gives independent comics, especially, a really bad name. Because then somebody, for sake of argument, will be at a comic book store and go, oh, this is the first issue, something I've never heard of. Oh, I'll check it out. They pick it up. They read an issue. And they like it, and then they wait 8 months, and then the second issue comes out, and it's half finished, and then the third issue never comes out. And they've invested into it, they like it, and there are so many stories of that, that for me, until you have at least 6 months to a year's worth of work, whatever your schedule is, like if you put out a comic every 4 months, you need to have at least 3 before you even hit publication. Mm. If you're not there, then don't put it out. That's my attitude.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree.
So that's where we're at. It's been a long journey, especially with just you really begin to get a feel for working with artists. I think when I see some of these books that get kickstarted and things like that, I look at these books and I go, do you have any idea what you're in for? But, like, they'll find some artist and they'll just go, we're going to make this book together. And like they've never worked together. The guys produce like 2 pages. Then they get all their Kickstarter money. And then all of a sudden, the book doesn't come out for 5 years. And I'm going, well, yeah, you've never worked with this person. You have no idea what's going on in their personal life. You don't know what their schedule is like. You have no idea what type of artist they are. Just jump in and you get people to invest money and then all of a sudden you have nothing to show for it. So for me, that type of stuff. I mean, we didn't even reach our Indiegogo goal. And I'm going, it's still going to get done. it's not like it's not going to get finished. So I don't know. I think it's something that's really important that people need to realize. When you get involved in comics, you're going to lose a lot of time and it's really time consuming and it involves a lot of money and you got to do it and you got to finish it when you start it. If you don't, then don't even start. you're not going to finish it, don't start. That's my attitude, really.
Right, right. No, like I said, you know, there's so many independents, right? Like, they start and they don't ever really finish it. And then,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I think they have no idea what they're in for, honestly.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was for me. You know, when I was starting out, I was like, oh, this guy is going to be great. He's going to keep producing at the same pace he's been producing at. And then all of a sudden, like 3 months later, it's like, where's my page? Oh, my dog died. Oh, okay. What does that have to do with the production? I'll tell you what. I've worked probably with at least, at this point, maybe 10 or 12 artists or 15 artists. I have never heard so many crazy situations happen in my entire life. One guy's dad died all of a sudden. One guy suddenly had a heart attack. Another guy had some weird health issue. Another guy had some weird medical issue that suddenly appeared. Like every excuse you could think of has appeared.
Right.
And my fiance is like, why don't you call them out on it? I'm like, why would I need to? If they are going to give me that kind of excuse, clearly they need to buy time for some reason.
Right.
Unless it becomes a huge problem, I'm not going to be like, well, I want to see the corpse. Well, let's go to the funeral house. I want to see the body. I just wish they could turn and say to me, hey, you know what? I started a new job. I don't have a lot of free time right now. Is it cool if I start this up again in a month? I'd rather have that, because right. that's okay. But instead, I'll get like, my dog died, and while he was dying, he killed my wife. And we're figuring it out. You know, the lawyers are here. But don't worry, that page right when I resurrect my dog and my wife, I'm working on that too. Right when that happens, that page is coming. Like, don't tell me that. Just tell me, hey, you know what? X, Y, and Z's going on in my life and things happen and this is the way it is. That's fine. I can deal with that. That's a lot easier. So.
Now see, John would show up at someone's house and say, show me the body, but that's
No, you waste more time doing that. It's just that. In that period, I think what I tend to do, and a lot of people working in comics, I think, especially if you're writing a comic and you're working with artists, I use the three-strike rule. It's like, first two times I let things slide, and I'll be really polite about it. Right around time number three, if it's some other ridiculous thing, I'm just be very polite and be like, look, if you don't fix X, Y, and Z issues going on, I'm going to have to replace you. That's the way it's going to be. I had one guy, I'm not even going to say who he is because he was like a professional in the industry. Like, he worked on some pretty big DC books. And I got him to work with me and I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And then I realized immediately why he was working with me and not DC. It became really obvious right away. And I sent him stuff he needed to do. And literally in, I think, maybe 2 to 3 months, he didn't do anything. And I was like, hey, man, you know, I know you've had weird issues going on, but I'm going to have to let you go. And this guy was so angry. He was just like, don't you ever talk to me again. You see me at a convention, don't say hello to me. This. And I'm like, whoa, what is going on?
I think one of the issues, too, is that when people get into this, unless you're a kid in school still, you always forget, like, oh, I've got a life, you know, outside of doing this. So, and that's going to take up time. You know, so unless you're willing to live in your mother's basement and work on it 24/7, you know, these things are going to come up. So it's, you know, like you said, it's tough. Or if you're a working artist and you're working for, let's say, Marvel and DC, well, you've got to, you know, they're probably paying you more money than Frightened Entertainment. Sorry.
No, hey, I'm offended. I can match any price they throw out.
Oh, okay. I'll keep that in mind. I'll have Brad do some work for you.
$1,000 a page, no problem. That's the work.
I gather you get a lot of people that are trying to do this while holding down a regular job too, so they can actually, like, you know, eat, pay bills, put their kid in school and stuff.
Which is totally like fine. Me? I mean, I have jobs too, right? I mean, I totally get that. But that's why I've said to people, realistically, I mean, James, how many times, whenever James and I were looking for people for Champions of Earth, we always had this joke that somebody would be like, I can do a page a day. And I'm like, how many pages do you think they actually produce? Because, like, whatever they tell you is not what they can do realistically.
Yeah.
they always throw out this outlandish number. Like, oh yeah, I could do a page a minute. <That's what he's> I could do a page a minute at this quality, and I work for a dollar. Like, they throw out like the most outlandish, you know, outlandish things. And then you know, I look at James and be like, what do you actually expect? And he's like, a page a month.
So how do you balance that time though? I mean, where, if you have a regular job and you have this need to create, how do you find the time to fit that into the regular 9-to-5, have to pay the taxes life?
I'll say what I've been doing for me is I try to draw at least, you know, X amount of hours per day. I try to do at least 2, but sometimes I try to do more. And then on the weekend, you spend at least 1 day drawing all day minimum. You know, and then if you can, ideally on Sunday, do the same thing. But then eventually you're going to burn out, you know. But that's kind of the way to go about it that I've experienced. I mean, you know, everybody's different. Some people have part-time jobs. Yes. I always work part-time jobs on purpose so I can have time to draw, you know. But then when I got a full-time job, you know, I suddenly was going, oh, I draw on lunch at my job all the time. Even my lunch break, I would just pull out my sketchbook and start drawing. You know, you got to find the time. It's hard. It's not easy, but you got to find it.
What about you, James?
Of Twitter. James.
How about you, Gabe?
Not there. Gabe's here, though. Gabe's here. No, I think they left, too. James, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. No, I had to bring myself closer.
Somebody asked you a question. Well,
if I am doing anything, it's usually on the clock.
That's true.
I'll tell you that. That's it. You know, that's
We won't say who his employer is, not to avoid him getting in trouble, but
you just work times two.
There's been plenty of instances where I'll ask James, when did you do this? While I was at work. when did you produce this thing while I was on the clock? That's when I did it.
Absolutely, yes. No, the best time to work is at work because you're getting paid to work.
That's right. That's right. I used to James and I used to have this crazy magazine distribution job where we used to get paid X amount of, like, we figured out a loophole to basically get away with doing our job and getting paid, like, you know, let's just say it took us 4 hours to do something, we figured out how to do it in one. And then we would, like, just kind of do whatever we wanted with that remaining time. And I'm like, whoa, now I'm getting paid to draw in my mind. Like, I would just pull out my work.
Nice.
Depends what jobs you have, you know? It also depends. Do you want to maintain a relationship with your friends? Do you want to maintain a relationship with your significant other? I told my fiance, if we didn't live together, I'd never see you.
Well, you know, uh-oh, she's probably just a time suck anyway.
That's my point, you know? But that's the answer. I mean, it's kind of one of these things. If you want to do it, you'll find the time. It's just you got to realize how many things you got to cut out of your life. You know, like, I can't believe how much free time I suddenly got when I just, like, I really don't use social networking at all. Like, I'm not going to use this. I check my email only 2 or 3 times per day. You'll find the time. When you suddenly have, like, a set schedule, like, I'm going to work this amount of time per day, if you're going to stick to that schedule, you will suddenly see how many things you cut out of your life. It's like, I know I don't have time to play PlayStation. No, I don't have time to do these things. No, honey, I can't pay attention to you right now. I have to draw this. Like, that's, that was happening today. Like, I was working on something and I'm like, oh, let's do this. No, you can sit there because until I'm done doing this, that's the way it is, right? And then I'm sure once I have kids, I'll ignore them. And then this circle will go on. But yeah, that's the best answer I could give. You just got to be really, really focused. And you'll just start finding time on the weekends. And, you know, you got to stick to it. That's really important.
And, yeah, no, it's funny because I won't say who I work for. And I'm sure
we all know, David. We all know.
I'm going to say, no. And I'm going to say that no one I work with listens to this, but, like, that's what I do when I'm at work, you know, working on promoting this show, doing artwork, you know, those kinds of things, because I'm getting paid to do it.
See, that's what I said.
Isn't that the best feeling ever?
It is.
Your employer doesn't have to know, but well, the joke James and I had was, "Hey, we're doing our job. We're just really good at it. We're just, it's like I'm being, our argument is, well, we're just, we should be rewarded for our efficiency. Like, it took somebody else four, it takes us one. Isn't that amazing? Shouldn't I be rewarded for that?
Getting to work on your art is the reward.
Yes. And what's funny is I remember when we stopped working those jobs, I actually ran into one of the people who was involved with it, and they said, "Man, you were so fast. Nobody was as fast as you." I'm like, "Yeah, because I was gaming the system." So I had a huge incentive to work really fast. So that's
crazy that no one's figured that out.
So do you guys have a plan for then in December on distribution and how you're going to get the book out there?
Pretty much my plan is I'm not even going to go near Diamond at this point. Because it's just too big, and you know, it's just the way that stuff works is, unless you're getting distribution of like at least 1,000 copies or something like that, you're gonna lose money on every book you sell after printing costs. So like, if you're doing print on demand, so what I'm gonna do is we're just gonna use, you know, Comixology and e-comics type of things, and then in addition to that, just local shops. You know, I'm in the Pacific Northwest, so Vancouver, Seattle, Victoria, probably Portland, and then James is gonna cover New York City. And that'll be like where you can physically pick up the books, and then you can buy them off of our website as well, obviously. So that's pretty much the plan. And then after that, I'm just going to keep putting out work, and then see where it goes, right? That's really the idea.
Right, right. Cool. Yeah. You know, maybe you guys should talk to Brad after this. He might be able to help you out with some stuff.
Sure. But yeah, is Gabe, are you there?
He keeps dropping in and out.
Yeah.
It's superhero speak. It's tech support problems.
I actually warped in and out. But yeah, but that's my advice on that situation. That was a long ramble.
But it's an important one because you get probably get a lot of people who come up with a really good idea or have some talent, and then they try to get into it, and then things like, you know, they're, like you said, their cat dies and then tries to murder their sister or something, and yep. and they lose hope. They think that they're doing something wrong because they can't find the time to do it. So telling newbies that this is the way it is, you just have to hang in and tough it out.
Yeah.
You know, that can help people who are just trying to get into this.
Yeah, you definitely got to put in the hours. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think what's really important, just jumping off of what was just said about putting in the hours, people have no idea how much time you have to put into it before you actually get to a point where you're satisfied with your work. I mean, it's like you just have to keep putting in the time and keep working. It takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of patience. You know, I could count, you know, so many times where I've worked on stuff and I will just literally erase the whole thing and start over. Or I'll be working on stuff with my company, and then all of a sudden, like, I'll be working with an artist, and boom, they fall off the face of the planet. I've invested X amount of money and time into them, and you just got to take it in stride. It happens. Keep going.
You got to be completely flexible with the market, because what ends up happening is, like our release, for example, with Firestorm, we put out Catman for the promotion. But, you know, we put out a book called Catman Evolution for the promotion, and we did issue one, and we've got it set up, and we've got 2 through 7 backstocked, about to release, and then we've got our other lines of books coming in as well. People don't realize, you know, I put in 16-18 hours a day, and I schedule things with my family to make sure that I don't neglect them.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I have the advantage of working from home, you know, that makes a big difference. But you know, as far as anybody's going out with a new book like this, like you guys are doing with Captives, how many pages do you guys have in that book? I looked at issue one. How many pages are you guys putting in?
At this point, each issue is 22 pages. The second issue is basically done. Like, I would say, so each issue is 22 pages. After that, we're cutting it down to 20 pages an issue.
Yeah. How many hours do you guys have tied up in that one so far?
Well, I'm not drawing it. I'm writing it.
Well, no, I mean, from the stage of scripting it, right, doing the artwork and producing it right now for the issue one that we saw.
Oh, that one?
You guys have, yeah, what do you guys have tied into that as total production?
I would say for me, writing-wise, I actually write particularly fast. It probably takes me about maybe, if I sat down and seriously wrote something, probably takes me about 3 to 4 days to write something. Or and then after that, you know, I would say I tie in maybe another 10 to 15 hours to really find somebody I want to work with. You're going to tie in another 5 hours or 6 hours just interacting with somebody and putting a contract together. And then after that, you're going to probably put in at least a minimum of an hour to an hour and a half a day, just acting almost as an editor.
So you're talking just about a week for the writing process alone. See, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, ballpark examples of the production time to give examples of it. Yeah. You know, I actually do pencil because I work so many hours in a day. I am able to pencil a couple pages a day. Yeah. But, I mean, that's just because I have so much time invested and, you know, I do this daily, six and 7 days a week around my other work. And, yeah, I tell you, man, it is crazy what people invest. You know, and I've got a 10-year-old daughter and, you know, a wife that expect to see me once in a while other than just hi, bye. So I feel you. So what's the storyline behind Captives? Go ahead and explain it from your perspective. I mean, like I said, I know we've looked at it. I don't know if John has or not. I know David did, and I got to peruse it. What are you guys looking at as far as the story perspective of it goes?
Captives is funny because it's one of these stories that has a very clear ending in mind. And as for the way I'm writing it, my logic basically is just writing a pretty dark comic because I tend to really like – have you ever seen or read the book Battle Royale?
Yep. What's it called?
Battle Royale.
Hmm. Oh, Battle Royale. Hmm.
I tend to really like stories where you have a group of characters put in one place, and they're all kind of set up in a situation where it's more in their advantage to be, you know, terrible people than good people. You know, so you're stuck in a death trap, and you just begin to realize you have to work together, but ultimately, at the end, there's a good chance everybody here is going to kill each other. And that was kind of the way I wanted to go about writing the story. Yes, there is a villain in the story, but the villain is also each character is kind of a villain in their own way, or they're put in a situation where they have to be almost.
John, to put it in perspective for you, it's Survivor.
No. Actually, I've seen Battle Royale. Battle Royale. There's a movie, and actually one of the animes I'm watching right now, Sword Art Online, is basically the same thing. It's a bunch of kids trapped in a game, and they suddenly start turning on each other. Look,
Right.
All I know is, you know, reading a comic book about Congress doesn't sound like a good idea.
Oh man.
No.
Nice.
I mean, but you know, that's just kind of an outside element of it. There's also a huge fantasy thing to it. We talked about this last time. I just really like fantasy, and it's just one of these books that, as it's being written and it really kind of the story unfolds, it's just. I don't know. I almost don't know how to. It almost has a life of its own. That's probably the best answer I can give you. That sounds a little pretentious, but it's certainly one of these stories where there's a clear beginning, middle, and end planned out. And then it just kind of progresses and you go along with the characters in this environment. And my attitude towards it really has been just make it to make it kind of attitude.
And then merchandising.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
If you need a t-shirt design, you know who to call.
Yeah, for sure. The thing about comics, and I always explain this to people, is you don't do it to make money. You do it because you love doing it, you know, and that's kind of it. And I think sometimes there's just an internal creative aspect to somebody where you just have to put a story out there. You have to do it. And that's how I feel about Captives. One of these stories, I started working on it. I'm like, I have to do this. I don't know why, I just do. So even Champions of Earth was, I feel like that was originally James's idea.
Yeah.
James, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I mean, Champions of Earth was originally James's idea, and then I just kind of came into it, and we just kind of bounced ideas off of each other and made it what it is. And what's really funny about that book is that I get a lot of different reactions from people on it. I've had some people be like, I love these characters. And I've had other people say to me, I hate these characters. And I'll tell them, you're not supposed to like them. They're not likable people. They're awful.
Right.
You know, you have these two main characters that are... The thing about Champions of Earth, for example, is it's a satire. It's a satire on, you know, superhero comics and lots of things. And I even had somebody say to me recently, why would I want to be invested in these characters? I'm like, you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to want to be invested in them. You're supposed to actually kind of want them to get screwed over. that's kind of the way the story is built.
Kind of like Game of Thrones.
A little bit. I mean, it's very like, you know, Champions of Earth, you got these two kids who are just basically the epitome of me, like one of my worst sides when I was 16 and one of James's worst sides even now. And it's the story plays out and, you know, you have these other characters in the background who keep getting screwed over and, you know, you're not supposed to root for them. Okay. So that's kind of another funny thing. And Captives, it's not exactly like that, but I don't know. It's a weird book for me to talk about.
Have you shown Captives yet? Have you guys seen Captives?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The art on issue one, I don't know where you found that guy, but it's...
He's incredible.
Incredible.
Yeah. And he drew the first half of issue two, and he's just amazing. And it got to a point where I just had to begrudgingly let him go. I didn't want to. It's like,
yeah, it has kind of an old John Buscema feel to it from like the old Conan stories.
Exactly.
It's got that kind of classic 70s, 80s black and white look. It's got a really, really classic look to it.
It's that kind of story too. It's like a very classic storybook story in a lot of ways, but it's darker. And it's actually originally inspired by the myth of the Minotaur. That's part of it too. So that's kind of original inspiration.
That makes a lot of sense.
The basic premise of Captives is you have a group of, there's basically this legend that there was this princess stuck in a tower. And the only way anybody can marry her is they have to go inside this labyrinth and kill this monster. This monster, according to the legend, used to be a suitor that tried to marry her, but he was actually somebody who betrayed his king. And now that king, who's the father of this princess, is punishing him and turning him into a monster. And he locks his daughter in a tower and he says, look, you know, obviously you betrayed me because you wanted to marry a guy that betrayed me. So until somebody kills your suitor, nobody can marry you. And that's the legend. And that legend's been going on for hundreds of years. And nobody has ever succeeded. They go on this maze and they die. Nobody ever comes out. Nobody knows how it works. So it's kind of this like mystery. And then there's this one main character. He's like, he falls in love with her and he wants to marry her. He's not really a fighter. He doesn't have a lot of training. Now he throws himself into this death trap. And then his brother comes to try to stop him from doing it. And then ultimately they all get stuck inside this death trap with a bunch of other people who are there for different reasons, whether it be they want to know what's inside the maze, they want power, they want to marry the princess. Like everybody has different reasons for being there. And then they're all basically trapped in this death trap. And that's kind of where the story goes. And they can't get out. And then it just kind of progresses from there. And it's just a very, I don't know, it's a very primal aspect of the story when I write it. I can't explain that, but it's, and the artwork on it was just crazy for me. I originally found that guy through James because James was working on a project and that guy sent his work in and James was like, I dig this guy's stuff, but it's not really good for what I'm trying to do. And then he sent me his stuff and I contacted him and I was like, here's my script. And then he just took it and ran with it. And he just did all this crazy stuff. And I love it. It's great.
So, the way you just described Captives, it made me think of, Maze Runner. But a much better premise for it.
I don't know what Maze Runner is.
My condolences.
It's I don't know. It's again, like, and it just kind of goes back to the aspect of, you know, people where you're stuck in a situation. Everybody's there for different reasons, and these aren't necessarily the best people here. And what's interesting for me, especially about working on that story, is my fiance. She really likes it a lot. She was saying to me how there really aren't a lot of legitimately good characters in this group. There's one or two, but the majority of these people are either neutral or just outright horrible. And I said, well, that's the type of people that would be attracted to essentially a death trap to begin with. You know, and that's kind of what makes it, there's a very fun aspect of writing it where you're writing characters that kind of have an, I don't know, it's there's something about, it's almost like the breakdown of society. That's a good way to explain it because everybody's stuck in this area and there's a society within them. There's actually a society within this maze. There's like a society, there's monsters, there's all this weird stuff. And everybody kind of just adapts to the environment. And it's almost like a new morality is created within this horrible environment. It's so dramatically different than the outside world. So, and that's another fun element of writing it. So I don't know. There's a lot of stuff there I can't fully explain, but it's in there.
All right. Maybe you need to stop watching Game of Thrones so much.
I haven't watched a lot of it, actually.
Oh. Reading Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies, yeah, a little bit more of that.
But. Okay. No, because I was just thinking about back to what you were saying about people's reactions to the characters in Champions of Earth. And when we had Tom DeFalco on the show, it's one of the things he said is like, as a writer, you know, I'm either going to have people who say, I hate this story or I love this story. And he's like, either one of those is fine, you know, because he's enlisting a reaction and that's what he wants, you know, whereas if they came up and like, I didn't really care either way, then he didn't do his job, you know, and that's what it's, you know, so if you have people coming up to you and saying, I don't really like these characters. They're not likable. Then you've done your job because you got a reaction out of them.
Right.
Well, what's weird to me about creating anything is, for me, you create something to create it. It's just, for whatever reason, you have to do it. And what I found when I meet other creators and the way they go about their work, what's always surprised me when I meet these creators where they're trying to tailor their work right out the gate to an audience or other people. They're like, oh, well, what is this person like? And I'll do this. And you tell me what you like and I'll throw it in there. And that to me right away is, it's like, if you're doing this in the first place, you're doing this instead of doing a real job and making real money. So just do it the way you want to do it. And if you're really sincere about it and you're good at it, it's going to attract people regardless. You know, I mean, maybe I'm wrong on that one, but that's
well, that's a little bit of a contradiction though. What is your vision for your audience though? Because I understand we all create to create. I mean, Stan Lee said it best when he said, I did all this stuff for myself and just found people that liked it like me. And I mean, if that's the approach you're taking, that's awesome. But what is that the approach you're after?
Yeah, that's okay.
I just wanted to clarify that because it was a little, I was a little confused about it.
Maybe I didn't explain it properly. Yeah, no, I actually really like that attitude. That I didn't even know Stanley said that, but I totally agree with that. It's just
I'm gonna write that above my drawing table now.
Well, yeah, I mean, he says that he even quotes himself saying, you know, repeating it numerous times and many things. But if you watch the making of the Daredevil movie from 2003, and you'll find that out hardcore. He's in that a lot in the interviews. But yeah, that's one of his key things. He always tells people that when he's asked, who do you write for? That's the first thing he says. It's me. I was always writing for myself. And I guess I was a little bit of a huckster in that way because I would write for myself and hope that other people would resonate to it.
The problem,
the
problem there is you have to buy the movie Daredevil and watch the making of it. So
that's true.
One of our teachers in school showed us Elektra extras because he was in them.
Oh, yeah,
So he bought the Elektra DVD. So that's probably a step below.
The funny thing is, I have them both. They're great acting in those movies. The problem was the effects and the budget wasn't there for the story. That's the problem with it. I mean, everybody wants to beat on Ben Affleck, but I actually enjoyed the movie for what it was. But of course, like Ben Affleck himself says, and Michael Clark Duncan said beforehand, you know, before he passed away, the movie that ended up on the cutting room floor wasn't the same movie that they made. So, you know, you got to take it with what it is.
Well, what's great about comics, and that's why I feel bad for people with film, is that in comics, you can just kind of get up and tell any story you want to tell. But in a film, there are millions upon millions upon millions of dollars tied into something. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people out there are like, oh, what, you want to make a story about whatever you want? I'll give you $500 million. Here you go. You know, it's just not the way the world works. What's great about comics is it's one of these, you know, storytelling art forms where you can just sit down and go, this is the type of story I want to tell, and I'm going to tell it. And I don't need tons and tons and tons of money. I just need to be able to make it, and I need time to do it. And if I need an artist, I just need to get an artist on board with me who's kind of seeing things the same way as me. That's all you really have to do, which is great. Now, granted, it's hard to stay afloat with that mentality. But the point is that there's something great about comics with that, which I love about it. Like, my cousin is a filmmaker, and he made this movie I really liked. And it cost him a lot of money to make it. And then after that, it basically bankrupted him. He just started making film, you know, and I'm going, that's horrible. Like, you couldn't even, you wanted to tell a story, you did. You had to spend a ton of money just to do it the way you want to do it. And now, you know, you're broke. Or you were broke for that moment anyway. Like,
well, that does happen to work in some cases, though. Because it worked for Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to, but there's give and take to everything. But yeah, and generally with comics, you can tell any kind of story. And we do have that advantage over other media that look badly on us off the tip of their nose.
I think the greatest example of what you're saying, Alex, in my opinion, is if Stan Lee wants to make a giant alien with a pink helmet on him that eats planets and put it in a comic book, the readers are going to accept that and say, oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yep.
But now when you go put it into a movie and you have to get millions of people to accept this as a character. Crowd. Right. Well, just as a character in general, that's when you start going, well, maybe it's not a giant guy with a purple helmet on. You know,
maybe it's a logger.
Wasn't it a pink helmet?
Okay, pink helmet.
But I've been talking a lot. Gabe, you talk.
Yeah, I've been in and out of this conversation because my Skype's been acting weird. But I don't know. I think the recent image boom is makes it pretty clear that if you let creators just create, there's an audience for that, just different, for like different products, just things that aren't necessarily your run-of-the-mill superhero comics. Like, look at Saga. Like, if you told me a space opera like would sell in this modern like marketplace, I wouldn't believe you. But look at Saga; it's amazing. And the sales are crazy.
Right. Or Walking Dead.
Or any other like Sex Criminals is a crazy book. If you told me there was a book where two characters have sex, freeze time, and rob banks, and it's amazing, I would not have believed you. Yet it's my favorite book every month. It's my favorite read. It's unbelievable.
I don't believe you. One of those characters. do you want to be freezing time and doing all those things?
Yeah.
What's really great about comic books is that you kind of have the advantage of going, I can do anything because I can draw it. Right? There's no moment where you're like, ooh, I don't know if the special effects budget can afford this. It's like, I want to blow something up every page. And I will. You know, and there's something great about that. So
yeah, and as an artist, there's this feeling of like when you finish a piece, you sit back and you're like, this piece didn't exist like 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago, this didn't exist.
Yeah.
And now because I'm here and I sat there and I did this and I worked at this, now this like world exists. And that's what I get out of drawing in my like my path of like creativity and stuff.
What do you think, James? Because I feel like you're left out. So.
No, I'm not left out. What were you talking about? Creativity. Yeah, you know, man. I'm pretty creative.
That's how a script. That's when James and I write a script deal. That's how it goes down.
Oh yeah, basically yeah.
James, what should we do here? You know, man.
You know, man. I'm pretty creative. and then magic happens.
And then I'm like, Jupiter Man should say that. It's true.
That's yes, exactly.
Comes out of his mouth. But yeah, no. It's working in comic books or just making comic books in general for me has been such a great experience. And I feel like something that's amazing to me about comic books is you'll find the most incredibly disciplined, talented people in the world.
Right.
And they're doing it for peanuts or for free, or they're losing money doing it. And it's like this moment of I'll find artists all the time who are incredible. And the amount of hours and time they put into their work, they deserve thousands of dollars for it, you know, per page. And they're getting 10 or 20 or 30 or nothing. They can make more money working at McDonald's. Right. And when you see that, there's kind of this love of a medium so much that you're willing to do that for it. And it comic books is full of that. And that's the one thing I really love about comics is that when you find comics and you find particularly great comics, you know, the person making it is doing it because that's what they want to do. They can be doing a million other things. And it's not like it's been fun. Making comics for anybody who makes comics is not fun.
It is not.
It's not fun. It's fun for like a moment. I've had people tell me, why do you do this if it's so stressful? Because you have to do it. That's like the best answer I can give people. Because there's something in you that has to do it. But it's not fun. It's not like, even when I've had people say to me, well, isn't drawing fun? No. Drawing is fun when you're 5 and you don't care about what it looks like. Drawing as a professional is not fun. It's fun sometimes, but it's not fun all the time.
It's fun when it's working.
Yeah, when it's working, it's great. But yeah. You know,
but it's not always working. There's like uphill battles. Like you end up fighting the image for hours.
And there's this big illusion I think people have about artists where they look at them like they're almost magicians. They have all these magical powers. And it's like, how can you draw like that? I could never do that. Yes, you can. Just devote 8,000 hours to it and you will. Right? But people hear that and they're just like, well, that's not, you know, I mean, aren't you just naturally talented? I mean, you know, look at Gabe. Gabe has been drawing his whole life since he was like 5. You know, just making art every day. And then, you know, he'll sit down and draw something, and I'm sure somebody will turn to you and be like, oh, you're so talented. You never practice. Right. You're just magic. You're just skilled. I got that
at the airport when I was going down to Savannah. I was like, whenever I go to have a flight or something, I always leave like way early so I can sit at the airport and just draw people.
Yeah, I do that too.
And then like this lady was like, wow, you can just do that? I was like, I mean, I can just do that now, but I couldn't just do that like 10 years ago, like you know, this is like years of training to get to this. And I don't think it's great, but it blows your mind.
I do that too. I've had people look at my sketchbook when I'm sketching on the bus and train. Like, that's really good. I'm like, well, you're wrong. This is terrible, but thank you. It's very nice of you, but this is awful. I mean, compared to what you can do, I'm sure it's great. But, you know, even I look at it almost like a professional athlete. You know, we'll see somebody field the ball in a baseball game. We're impressed. Like, wow, that's a big deal. You know, I could never throw the ball that far that fast. But, you know, to that guy, how much time did he spend doing that? And to him, he's like, I didn't even do that well.
Right, right. That's, oh, exactly. That's, yeah, that's a, no, it's funny, too, because, you know, what is it, 10,000 hours, they say? And
yeah, yeah, Malcolm Gladwell?
Yeah, yes.
10,000 hours.
Right. So, it's true. I mean, every artist I know is always working, always drawing. Like, there's not, you know, there's not a time they don't have a pencil in their hand. And it's not like they started at, they didn't come out of the womb drawing like that. It took them doing over and over again.
I always tell people, if you don't have a sketchbook on your person at all times, you're not doing it right. Like, you should always be able to draw it at a moment's notice. Like, if you're anywhere, because there's always something to draw and always something to learn from that drawing.
I've
absolutely people, yeah.
I met somebody recently who was talking about they were flirting with the idea of doing comics. Like, maybe I think
poor soul.
Maybe I think I might do comics. It sounds like fun. And I'm like, don't even start. If that's your attitude, don't even start. You have no idea what you're in for. That to me is the equivalent of being like, I think I might box Mike Tyson. Maybe I'll give it a shot. Like, do you understand how harsh and hard this is? Like, this is not a fun thing to do, and it's incredibly hard. And, you know, but it's great. It's great to do it somehow. I don't know. Like, I've given people the worst impression of making comics.
Yeah, it feels good when it's over.
That's true. I'll say this.
When you've made the thing, yeah. When you've finished the thing, it feels great.
Commenting on what James is saying, like, for me, when Champions of Earth is getting really close to being done, it feels so good. It's just like, it's going to get done. It's going to get done. It's going to be finished soon. I've had to deal with so many things to get this to where it's at right now. Once it's done, I'm going to, you know, finish it. I'm going to put it on a shelf. I'm going to hate it in a year, but I made it.
That's true with any, I think, creative endeavor that people get into. Like, if you're just someone who doing work around your own house and you want to lay a new tile floor or something, you know, while you're doing it, it's hard work. But then once you get near the end, you're like, oh, thank God it's done, you know, and you're happy about it and you're proud and it's something you created, you know, and then a year later you hate it and want to change it.
I especially kind of jumping off what you're saying about pride. I think it's really important. I think something people don't realize is that whenever you see people who are particularly proud of something, it's because they usually went through hell to get it. Like, you can't really be proud of something somebody gave you, right? But when you've kind of gone through, and that's how I feel about comics too, there's something about the amount of work that goes into it. And I remember I was reading, you know, Cerebus Guide to Self-Publishing, and Dave Sim was saying, you do realize the amount of time you put into that drawing, it's going to be looked at for 3 seconds.
Right.
There's a guy there talking. Maybe you spent 10 hours drawing that face because you wanted it to look right. They're going to look at it for literally 5 seconds. They're going to move on to the next.
There's like a comic school out in Vancouver or something. No, maybe not Vancouver. It's like, it's a small one that like a bunch of indie cartoonists run. Okay. And there's like a strip in like the pamphlet that's like this guy at a desk. And it's like the months are passing. It's January, November. Like it's, and then he hands it to a guy. And then it goes 10 minutes later, the guy hands it back. And he's like, that was good. So the guy spent like this whole year. It's like the perfect analogy of making comics is that I haven't done it in a while, but I get the itch every now and then. And just
animation
like,
is like an even crazier version of that. No. You know, I did a cleanup test, you know, that Gabe hooked me up with. I remember putting so much time into this thing. It was literally 5 seconds. Like somebody moving their arm.
Yeah, I spent like a week on a scene, and the scene is like less than 10 seconds of screen time.
Well, it's like Joe Kubert says, you know, about his art school. He tells people when you sign up, the first thing that the line says in the bottom of the application is says, if you're going to take this serious, you really need to take this serious. Here's something I tell all my new students. It takes 20 years to get good. It takes 20 seconds for an editor to rip you apart.
You guys, I'm not going to say the artist of who it is, but I read this blog from an artist, and what they used to do is they would deliberately put mistakes inside of a comic on purpose that they could easily fix later. So when the editor looked, because his joke was, an editor's job is to find mistakes. That's what they get paid for. So your job is to give them mistakes.
I think I told you this story.
I maybe you did, but I read the article. I read it. And then, like, for example, he would draw a character, and then he would go into Photoshop and distort the head slightly too big. And then the editor would be like, this is looking good, but that head. And then he would just go into Photoshop and, like, undo it. Like, oh, I fixed it.
That's pretty smart.
I thought it was a good idea.
Is this someone working in the industry today?
Yeah, they're actually pretty prominent in the industry. I'd like to see who it is. But...
he's working for one of the big two, huh?
I don't want to
give it. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't want to reveal who it is.
He or she.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Does he? I think I know who you're talking about. Does he? Is he known?
No
for
comment. Working, no comment.
Is he known for working on a book about a guy who dresses up as a flying rodent?
Danger, Will Robinson.
I'm gonna answer that question. What I find funny about comics is I can't believe how much trash talking there is in this industry, which shocks me. I was amazed when I started. Like, you go on any social networking, it's like, this artist hates this guy, and this person hates this person. And, like, they all argue amongst themselves all the time. And I was like, we have a job. Or, like, you guys get to have a job where you get to make comics all day, and you do it because you love it. Do you need to make it worse?
that's a bad thing with the market. That's actually a real problem because it's competition over community, and like the old bullpens used to help each other out. You know, if one guy got sick, another guy would slip in and ghost for him to make sure that his job got done. But nowadays, man, there's so much competition. There's only that top 100 titles with the big two or three, and everybody wants a piece to that action. And the thing is there's not enough room. And as soon as people realize that you can create whatever you want to create and work on other jobs because there's more than the top 100 books, you're going to be a lot better off.
Right.
But they got to promote the drama just to cause grief.
It's even the stuff where I've just seen, you know, people in the comic book community cause drama all over the internet. I'm like, you know, if you spent even half as much time working on your stuff as you do on the internet, you'd be a lot better at what you do.
Especially if you point that anger at a focused proposition like, you know, taking down a major distributor that's monopolizing the market, not saying any names, Diamond. But, you know.
Who could you be talking about?
I think one of the things that where this spawned from is, you know, we had the comic boom in the 90s, and we had all these different publishers that popped up that were hiring all these guys who were paying them a decent wage at the time for what their work was. And then a lot of those publishers went away. But now
because of what their work was.
But now you have all these same artists and writers still trying to get jobs, and there's less jobs out there. So there's a mentality of, well, if I tear this guy down, I'll get hired, instead of, oh, let's all work together, you know.
Right.
My point is this. There's absolutely nothing wrong with saying, I'm going to tear that guy down, but do it through your work. I'm better than you. Not, oh, I'm going to cause drama on the internet.
Yeah, like, put your page where your mouth is up on the book. You know,
exactly. Yeah, don't just sit, go on the internet and be like, oh, you stink and this. Why don't you do a really good job and show that person they stink or outcompete them in the market? You don't have to.
Right.
It's so petty, you know. I don't know. It's ridiculous to me, but I don't get it.
It's true.
I'm sure, you know, if I'm fortunate enough to be successful enough one day that people are going to take pot shots at me. Like, if I've ever reached that level of success.
Just stay off the internet.
Yeah, no, I'm just honestly going to ignore it. If somebody's like, this person's attacking you on this website or this thing. I'm like, that's nice. Back to what I was doing.
Those will be the best nights of my life.
I'll tell you what, Alex, if you ever make it really big, we'll make sure we tear you apart on this podcast every time.
That's fine. That's fine. And you know what? I'll literally go, that's cool. Back to what I was doing. You know, it shocks me how much people care about what other people they don't know think about them, especially in the comic book industry. It's like, was anybody who really works comics that popular at any point in their life? And now it's like, oh, people are talking bad about me on the internet. People have been talking bad about you your whole life, probably, in some way, shape, or form. But right. Now it's a big deal.
Because now you see it.
No, you don't have to see it. You can just ignore it. I don't get it. But anyway, that's my two cents on all those million topics there.
But that's what social media is for. So,
social media was once a great thing. Now it is something I hate. I used to love social media. Now it's just become an outlet for people to complain. It's just. Oh, my life sucks. Let me just dump it on the internet and onto somebody else.
Look, if you don't go on Facebook every day, how are you going to know what to be offended by today?
You know what it is? It's almost like I used to put out, when I was putting out magazines, I put out those tabloid magazines. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, who buys these? And now I'm going, it's all the people who are on the internet now. They buy them. They're the ones that care about what somebody's doing every single second of the day. Did you hear Tom Cruise bit into a sandwich really loud and hurt someone's hearing? Isn't that crazy? Like, no, I really don't. Oh, did he put out a new movie? Oh, no, he didn't. So we're going to talk about the way he ate a sandwich loudly and it was rude? Like, that's what the internet has become. That's all people want to talk about.
This conversation offends me.
It's I don't know. And that's that. And I thought, I don't know. But yeah, and then Gabe wants to promote his website.
Thanks. Very subtle.
There was a pause. I filled it. Okay. Go ahead, promote it.
Go ahead.
It's gubgubgub.net. It's just an art site. I got all my stuff up there. I got some screen prints for sale too that I do, and I have some fine art up there for sale as well.
Cool.
Good.
Yeah.
We will put the link in the description of the episode. So, cool.
If you want some,
go check it out.
If you want some old timey cartoon inspired pop art, you come to Gabe.
Gabe is the guy.
What about Silent James?
Oh no, I don't do nothing for nobody. I work for myself.
No, somebody was gonna promote you. You're like, I don't know. I don't want that. I'll be honest. I usually have to drag James kicking and screaming to everything. So I was shocked. I remember even telling David, like, he might come. I have no idea what he's gonna do. So.
I'm a rock star.
The fact that he's even here, and he's like, yeah, people don't even know what I'm doing. Just know that I'm here. The fact that I decided to come. I was going to say, David, you know what you should do is at New York Comic Con, you should just have a microphone and interview people. That would be awesome.
I would if I wasn't working.
Well, you can just have a little walkie-talkie, you know, like not walkie-talkie, like a little tape deck, but a microphone inside of it, you know, on your off time.
No, I actually have a really good microphone that connects to my phone.
Oh, really?
And
there you go.
We went to the Great Philadelphia Comic Con earlier this year, and that's what we did. We walked around and talked to people, and we, you know, then we tagged that all together and put it out as an episode. I would love to do that.
Do it at New York Comic Con. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right. Then fine. Everyone listening, do me a favor. Like on Friday, don't buy any art from Greg Ward.
No.
And then I can walk around and work.
People just start walking. No, he'll just be like, why is nobody here?
I don't know, Greg. Let me go check some stuff out. I'll be right back.
Why do you keep talking to everybody?
I don't know. I'll be back.
It's really fun, actually. And yeah, so I could just keep going if you want to make it a 2-hour episode. That's fine with me. I ran my mouth for like 50 minutes, I feel like. I'm like rambling about what my comic is about.
Hold on. Alex is rambling?
Get out of here. This is news. It's funny. I find I hate talking about certain things because I'm like, I'm not going to explain it right. And then later I'm going to listen to me talk about captains later and be like, that's not what I meant to say. All right.
I'm going to bring up a completely off the wall topic because it's something that I saw today and it's a.
But Alex can't answer the question, right? That's the rule.
All right. That's nice. He can answer it last. So I was, I don't know if you guys have been following any of the news for Civil War, but there were some set pictures that were quote unquote leaked online. And there's two of the Spider-Man costume. They're close up pictures, so you really can't make much out. One, it looks like a plastic disc, and it's like in red material. And to me, it looks like it's possibly the web shooter, but other people thinking it's the eye socket. And then there's another close up that's just red and black material. And like when I first saw him, like, eh, you really can't tell anything. I don't care. I'll wait till we get to see the official picture, blah blah. But I saw this on the Nerdist website today, in the Nerdist news, and it drove me nuts. And it's like, no, they're not doing that. How dare you say that? Jessica Chobot's theory is, oh, it's going to be the Miles Morales costume, but Peter Parker's going to be wearing it, so that way they can tie it in and make the fans happy. Bullshit.
Well, there is one thing you can tell from those pictures. He used 800 count thread count sheets to make the costume, so he must be very comfortable.
Yes, it's a very close up. So that's my take on it is no. I think they're just going to do red and black, the way Spider-Man was originally meant to be. But what do you guys think? Let's start with James.
I think they're going to go with a classic look. I mean, they finally have the opportunity. Marvel has the opportunity to make a Spider-Man movie. I think they're going to go classic.
Yeah,
that's my opinion.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen the photos yet, but they gotta go with classic, right? I mean,
yeah,
the mainstream audience isn't ready for or doesn't even have any familiarity with the other characters, so they gotta go as classic as possible. I would imagine, just for broader appeal.
Right. Right. Yeah, because I think one of the things, too, is like a lot of people don't realize this is a lot of things that start out black in the comic books eventually become blue just because black, it's hard to have detail in it when it's all black. So Batman was black and gray originally and he became blue and gray, and Spider-Man was black and red and he became blue and red.
Right. It was a highlight situation with the colors and the printing, and they used to have to use the blue to bring out the highlights.
Right, exactly. So,
and it eventually overtook it with the lighting. So,
that's my guess. It's the classic look, but black and red. What do you think, cool. Alex?
I think they need to just put Spider Pig in the movie. That's my take. Spider Ham. I'm sorry. That's it. We need to throw the fans for a loop. They're gonna see it anyway. They're going to see it anyway. So just Spider-Ham.
But it's a dark and gritty Spider-Ham.
They already did that. They put Howard the Duck in, damn it.
No, but Spider-Ham should, like, you should see Peter Parker, and then he blows up, and then Spider-Ham is behind him with, like, a smoking bazooka. He's like, it's my turn now. And, like, that's one of the character introductions, and then everybody will be outraged, and then they'll go see it anyway.
I'll only accept it if we get the frog version of Thor.
That's right.
And we get Howard Duck in the movie as well.
That's right. I don't know. I felt like if I was in charge of Marvel, I'd be the worst person right now. I'm like, yeah, we could do anything. They'll put up with it. Let's just make Wolverine actual Wolverine.
You're not wrong.
Let's do that.
Or if you're going to bring Spider-Ham in, do zombie Spider-Ham?
That's right. That's right. I would be like, let's make Wolverine a Wolverine in a Wolverine costume. Let's do that. It would be great. You know, I that's what I would do.
And then make him a furry. Like,
make him. That's right. That's a really good idea. And then, you know, I would just be such a troll if I was in charge of Marvel. Like, well, it's going to piss somebody off today. Let's do that. You know, it's Silver Surfer. Rollerblades now, baby. That's the way we're doing it. Silver rollerblader. That's how we're going to do it. And then someone would be like, I'm outraged. And they'll be buying the ticket as they're saying it. Like, that's ridiculous.
Have the big black letters on his ass say, was it shiny or,
that's right,
or juicy?
That's right.
Or,
juicy. That's right.
And well, so, for him, yeah. Shiny, but you know.
that's what I would do. So, I mean, honestly, like, I have no good answer to that question in all seriousness. I have no idea what Marvel is going to do. I have no clue. The moves Marvel has made in the past, like, 3 to 4 years, I could have never saw those coming. So, I have no clue at this point what Marvel is going to do. I mean, it's like, let's kill Spider-Man again. Let's make him go back in time and redo his continuity for the 14th time. And now Dr. Octopus. If somebody said to me, do you think one day Dr. Octopus is going to be Spider-Man? Be like, that's ridiculous. That would never happen. It did. So at this point, I have no clue.
Well, think about this one. You know, Age of Apocalypse is coming up from Fox here pretty quick, right? Yeah. Well, here's a catch 22 for you. Psylocke is a hero. We know this. She was an assassin in the original comic storyline that turned good because of her brother, blah, blah, blah. Well, the movie version is going to end up one of two ways. It's either going to wind up as another Wolverine movie, and it's either going to have him, which they're leading the press a different way, surprisingly, which is going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be a big box office smash for another Wolverine X-Men movie, or it's going to go sideways, and Psylocke is going to stab Apocalypse through the head and become an X-Men. You watch what happens. I'll give you that solid prediction. I did the same thing on Ant-Man.
I just can't get over what Apocalypse looks like in that movie.
I know. There's a huge Ivan Ooze reference going on right now because you know Fox with their budget.
He looks like Ivan Ooze.
Yeah, they put all the effects into the Fox new release of the Fantastic Four reboot, which is going to be horrible anyway. We ripped on that one many times, which they just did a press release saying that they were going to block the press up until an hour of the East Coast launch. Saying any reviews or anything, and they're saying it's for the press reviews of a typical Marvel Disney launch, but the thing is it's not. They're holding back because the movie sucks, and right. It's all suit based.
Do you think it's gonna lose money? I actually think it's gonna make money.
It'll make money because people see it. It'll make money because people want to find out what it's about. But the problem is, I've rambled on about this for months. Is the thing is they've got the thing. Is a four-fingered, bare-butted model running around, you know, anatomically as correct as a Ken doll, and has Sandman powers and can escalate his size and shape, and has a dust, the sandstorm punch effect, and it's really bad. And then all of the other three, their powers are controlled by the armor they wear. It's not by them itself. As the Fantastic Four characters, it's not the same machine at all.
Whenever I see these movies being made, you know, I always just think to myself, no matter what they do, it's going to make money.
make money with it because people are going to go see it no matter what to find out what the true story is.
And then they're going to reboot it again. So it doesn't matter, right? It's just, well, you know, they screwed this. It's like New Coke, right? They made New Coke and it was terrible, right? And everyone's like, this is the worst. And then everybody was like, well, they're bringing back classic Coke. Everybody bought New Coke anyway, and then they bring back classic Coke, and they make money off of that. Like, that's what Marvel is going to – I've always thought that it doesn't – the thing, when you read comic books for long enough, you realize nothing matters. Like, nothing changes. You know, if all of a sudden they want Spider-Man to be, you know, a German Shepherd in a Spider-Man suit, that's going to last for, like, 5 months. And Marvel's going to be like, no, this is the new direction of – Peter Parker, you know, he's going to be a German Shepherd in a Spider-Man suit. And then, you know, in a year, he'll be back to normal. So, you know, they can screw up the Fantastic Four and then they'll make a new Fantastic Four movie and they'll be like, this one isn't bad. And then everybody will go see it. So it's all the same. They got a good racket, actually. They can't lose. They can't lose. That's just the funniest thing about it. I mean, look, people hate Batman Forever. It's actually my favorite Batman movie, but people hate it. And
love Batman Forever.
I love that movie. And people hated it, and it made money. So it's just...
You're a brave man to admit that in public.
I can defend it.
let's not get into this.
I will sit down and break down scene for scene why it's a good movie. I will do it.
I got your back.
At least you're not defending Batman and Robin.
No. I mean, I will say I do love the lines when, you know, Arnold is like, chill with the ice. I mean, come on. If it wasn't literally for me, if that was the whole movie, I would have seen it. I would have loved it. I mean, I've seen it, but I would have loved it. Oh, man, he said, chill, take two of these and call me in the morning. Like, whatever corny lines he has because he's Dr. Freeze or something. It was, I love that stuff. I never get tired of it. I mean, come on, when he threw a giant knife through that guy and said, stick around in Predator? That was a whole movie? It'd be great. And that's what if I was in charge of Marvel, I would do that. I would have Gambit say, you know, go fish when he throws cards and stuff like that. And it would be great. And people would, and they would, oh man, Alex is really screwing up Marvel. He's a new chief for some reason. It's really messing things up, but sales are out of the roof. Why are you making so much money? Because everyone's so outraged. And then they'll fire me and they'll bring in the classic again. So that's what they're going to do at Civil War. I mean, I couldn't even put, like, if somebody said, well, you bet $1 about what they're going to do, I would say no. I have no idea what they're going to do. I have no clue what they're going to do.
Right.
They do what they want. That's what they do. We're along for the ride.
Cool. Yeah, so we're a little over an hour right now. So just to wrap it up, okay, so you have Champions of Earth and Captives coming out in December.
Ideally,
and
if not January, you know, I want to make sure everything is done before I put it out. But should be fine. Everything is going on schedule, so it should be fine.
Is there anything else you want people to look out for?
German Shepherd Spider-Man.
German Shepherd Spider-Man. Check out gub.net. Is that it?
Yes. What about our potential project?
I wasn't gonna bring it up. Tell me not to bring it up.
we have
he tells me before the show, are we gonna talk about this? No, unless somebody asks, I won't talk about it. Now he's like, I'm bringing it up all of a sudden.
Well, he asked, so there you go.
Well, me and Alex may have a podcast of our own coming up soon. We're ironing out the details kind of right now and getting things together. But the premise, should I give?
Are you going to tell people the premise? Come on.
Should I give away the? I'll give away the premise. Like,
give it away.
Okay, we're basically watching every episode of the Ninja Turtles classic series, and every episode of the podcast will coincide with one episode of Ninja Turtles. I watch them in order from beginning to end. I haven't seen them since I was 8, and I don't know what Alex's situation is.
I haven't seen them in a very long time. We're going
in blind, and we're going to review, comment, discuss each episode as they air.
And also talk about Teenage Ninja Turtles news. You wanted to have a segment, background character of the week. Some characters in the background.
So let me get this straight. It is, though, the 80s OG Ninja Turtles.
Yes, the classic series. Yes. Because that show is insane, apparently, if you watch it when you're older. I have not seen it since I was 6 and or 8 or whatever, however it was. But apparently it's crazier than I remember.
And as an animator, it probably drive you crazy. Because I can't watch
cartoons now. They bought, like, old cartoons like Batman the Animated Series. I love mistakes. So many mistakes in that show that it bothers me. You go frame by frame, like things drop off, faces change color and stuff. You're like,
in the original Turtles, the headbands change colors.
it's funny too, because like you're definitely right. It's probably insane. As a parent of somebody who watches the current Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on Nickelodeon, like it's actually very well done, but they're trying to come up with a plausible explanation for everything. You know, I mean, yes, it's aliens from another dimension, but it all ties together somehow. It's mutagen making all the evil mutants and whatnot. Where in the old cartoon, if I were, you know, thinking back on it, just like, you know, here's a pig man and he's just there. There's no explanation. He's just there.
They're just characters introduced to sell toys, which is right. Amazing. Because it's just like, this episode features a crocodile man because we're putting out the toy next month. So here comes Crocodile Man.
That was a great toy.
I had that toy, actually. It was whatever the crocodile was, I had that toy.
I got his name, but I had the crocodile.
All right. Well, you guys will have to let us know when that launches, and we'll definitely promote it on our show. And
Yes. Cool. It was fun. Sorry if I went on.
do a lot of editing.
Yeah, you should edit.
Entirely out of the podcast. Just edit it out entirely.
It'll be like 10 minutes.
I'm just going to edit out all the babbling that James did. Because, you know, he just went on and
that's
on and
smart.
On.
James, he's got to always be the center of attention.
Such strong opinions.
Social butterfly.
Yes, COE, Champions of Earth, coming out, should be in December, alongside with Captives for Fright Entertainment. It'll be fun. And then, it'll be good. I'll keep everybody in the loop. I'm going to start really advertising now. It's kind of the beginning of that, I suppose. But it's coming together. I'm actually really proud of it. It's going to be great. It's going to be a fun comic. Everybody from Superhero, you know, from your podcast here, will get free issues on me. Digital ones. David gets hard copies because, you know, he donated to the craft.
What about Brad and John? They don't get anything?
They get digital ones. All right. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see what's going on.
Well, as we say each and every week, boys and girls, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Okay, now it's my turn. Okay, what are you doing? Taking over Dad's mic so I can be part of superhero speak. Duh. Well, there are better ways to join the conversation. Really? Like what? Well, you can interact with them on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and even Pinterest. Wait, people use Pinterest? And what's Google+? I don't know, something to do with circles. Anyway, you can also see all their posts, including comic book reviews, on their website, where you can also sign up for their mailing list. Cool! Yep, are you still going to try to hijack Dad's mic? Nope, I'm going to try to answer the Stump the Geek question. Nice. So who do you think would win in a fight between Rainbow Dash and Squirrel Girl? Oh, that's a hard one. Oh no, Dad's waking up. Memphis Lies!
Oh, what are you guys doing? That cape's gonna get caught in the door.